Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Liz Loza. We've got Andy Behrens joining us today. I am going to read what our pod producer wrote in the outline because I would never think to say this in the first person, but he did write, which I think is humorous, and shout out to Brett. Two titans of the industry unite in the arena of the podcast metaverse like Godzilla and King Kong. Who are you, Zilla or Kong?
Oh man, that's actually a good question that I was hardly prepared for. I was a big Kong fan when I was a little kid, so I guess I'll tilt to King Kong. Nothing against Godzilla, got nothing but respect for Godzilla, but I'll go King Kong here.
Okay, so you get to be like the nice one with a heart of gold that likes children, and I am meanwhile the cold-hearted reptilian monster.
No, Godzilla wasn't always a cold-hearted reptilian monster. Although, like, perhaps you have not seen the most recent Godzilla releases.
Girl, I saw them all.
Okay. The level of like death and property damage in those films is amazing to me. Like all of Las Vegas, all of Honolulu, all of like how many major world cities have to be destroyed in those films. It's really something.
I love that you mentioned the property damage though, because I thought the same thing. And you know, you're an adult when you're like, oh, that's going to cost a lot to replace. Like,
yeah. You're watching it and you're thinking, well, we're all going to have to pay for that, aren't we? That's yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought the last one was a mega bust, but it entertained me for whatever it didn't. It entertained me for about 30 minutes. And then the other 60 minutes, I was like, well, how the jumps of the suspension of disbelief is just massive here. But all right, I'm already in.
Yeah, it's a bit much. I'll give you that.
If we're going to talk about suspension of disbelief, it looks like Tom Brady could not believe that any team did not want his services. One of the few news tidbits that has blessed our timelines over the past few days was Tom Brady's comments from the shop. And he said, in reference to one of the teams that ended up not wanting him in free agency, he couldn't believe that they were sticking with that M bleeper.
I was thinking, you're sticking with that mother?
And if we are going to read between the tea leaves, which by the way are not particularly vast here. Like, we know that the Chargers, the 49ers, and the Buccaneers were the three teams most interested in the end of that free agency period. Jimmy G is the front runner for this comment, no?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Way to keep it all ages there, by the way, with the M bleeper. I appreciate that. Yeah, it almost certainly has to be Jimmy G and the Niners. My initial reaction as soon as I heard it was, oh man, please don't be the Bears. That's a bad look. And I just don't want to think about them being that close and then saying, nah, we're gonna skip it. We're just gonna run it back with Mitch and Foles. It would have been a perfectly sensible comment regarding the Bears quarterback situation, but like, I don't know, man. Coming off that Super Bowl that Jimmy had just had, right? A bunch of misfires late in the game, a horrendous overthrow that could have obviously, in part changed NFL history, right? It was a terrible game. So like, it's kind of fitting. The Niners are, of course, probably not going to run it back with Jimmy G again this year, but like, I get it. And Brady's from like San Mateo or something mm-hmm. like that too, right? So you can certainly imagine that was his first choice. I mean, he made a great choice. Like the Buccaneers situation was about as good as it gets in terms of skill positions around him, defense behind him, like great situation, obviously. But San Francisco ostensibly would have been as well. You can't predict the zillion different injuries that were going to hit them last year. Sure. I mean, that would have looked like a really ripe situation. Obviously, they'd just been to a Super Bowl. I get it. One of the, like, how weird and frustrating is it that Tom Brady has just become inarguably likable in the the close of his career, right? Like, between what he's doing on social media and comments like this. I mean,
I also think this particular
I didn't mean to like him.
Well, I know. Yeah, sure. But I also think this particular comment only adds to the myth of his existence, because obviously the storyline was like, look at Tom Brady winning Super Bowls without Bill Belichick. But also, knowing this backstory, he just beat the team that Jimmy G could not beat 1 year prior.
Yeah.
So it's like an additional bleep to Kyle Shanahan and Bill Belichick. And now, I mean, the late, great Therese Paylor used to say that Tom Brady is a note taker, and we didn't even know he took this note.
Yeah, that's right. Like, it's so easy to imagine him watching that Super Bowl just aghast at the throws that Jimmy was missing too, right? Because I mean, I don't need to remind Niners fans that that was a very winnable game, an extremely winnable game. It was, you know, you hit the throws that you're supposed to hit and it's won, it's over. So I can only imagine how agonizing that had to be for Brady to watch it.
If you're, again, here's Andy, you're just setting me up. Like, this is a perfect, I would say this might be Suns like in assists. If you watched the game last night, another fantastic one from you. I'm not comparing myself, guys, everybody calm down. But if we're talking about agony, the waffle guy, Lee Sanderlin, the fine young man from Mississippi who lost his fantasy league, tweeted his agony upon completing his fantasy punishment, which was handed out because he came in last place and he was required to spend 24 hours in a Waffle House. Have you ever been to a Waffle House?
I have been to a Waffle House. I'm sure that I've not ever spent more than 75 minutes in any one sitting in a Waffle House. And it's hard to imagine 25. I realize he didn't have to spend the entire 24 hours there, but I can hardly imagine spending more than 90 minutes in a Waffle House.
I mean, I think he should have spent 48 hours because he didn't play on the better platform. But that's beside the point. He did have 1 hour
That's a very good point.
Deducted for every waffle consumed. And the final tally was 9 waffles, 15 hours, and unofficially 8 years shaved off his young life.
That is probably the outer limit of what I think I could consume waffle-wise in a 24-hour period. Like, it strikes me as one of those things that probably sounds easy, but by the fourth waffle, even if you take a nice break, even if you knock out like 3 waffles in the morning and then you're thinking, okay, but like 2 hours down the road, 3 hours down the road, I'm going to be ready for 3 more waffles. I bet that fourth waffle is quite a challenge. And by the time you're at 5 or 6, I bet it's just nothing but horrors.
I thought about 2 things while reading the story. Number one, can you imagine Dalton Del Don in this situation? You as the person who eats Dalton's leftovers regularly.
This is true. Every corporate function that we've had, every like team building exercise that Yahoo has done in the Dalton Del Don era, every time the crew has been out to eat, I have to finish whatever is on Dalton's plate. He always talks a big game. Oh yeah, I'm getting I'm getting this mega steak. I'm getting everything on the breakfast menu. And then it just all comes down to me. He knows that I'm the closer on everything. Who's finishing Dalton's meals like when I'm not around?
I don't know. I mean, he's got toddlers. I don't know, but I definitely thought about him because I was like, man, what would he do without Andy there to be like, dude, just give me the fork. I'll finish it for you. Go away. The other thing I thought, though, when I was reading the thread of tweets was like, you know, this guy, I'm going to assume he doesn't have a spouse or a partner or children, because I feel like I definitely would have been like, all right, well, there's something to organize in here. Like, let me get in that food pantry. You have a label maker? I'm sure your lemon wedges need some repurposing. Like, what about, have you married all the ketchups right now? How about the salt and pepper shakers? Can we fill those? Like, I just can't imagine being in a new space and not starting to tidy it as a way to pass the time.
So by like the second hour, you're just taking ownership of that Waffle House.
Sure.
You're like, this have is my Waffle House, yeah. And it is... Yeah, it is going to reflect the fact that Liz Lozo spent 24 hours here. I appreciate
Could have
that.
Had like a Coyote Ugly remake starring just me on the counter with some cinnamon buns instead of martini shakers. Anyway, what was the worst fantasy punishment that you've ever heard of or maybe even seen?
Yeah, I see a lot that are like, you know, you have to get a tattoo, you have to do this, you have to do that. The stuff that always gets me, it's kind of like this one where there's like a real time component to it, where it's not just, you know, it's not just something you knock out in an hour and something that is mildly embarrassing to you for a brief period of time. It's like, I know of a couple leagues where people have to take either the ACT or the SAT and share their results with the entire league when upon completion, right? So not only are you signing up for like a 4-hour test, but there's an element of, you know, how much how much does pride kind of mess with you there, right? Like, do you, like, is it okay with you to just show up and totally bomb the SAT? Like, I don't know that I could do that. Maybe that's the right thing to do. Maybe you're somehow helping the population of college-bound students by doing that. I have no idea. But, like, I don't think I could just show up and not know anything. I would have to review some of the key, you know, the math formulas and the, you know, whatever. I would just have to prep for it at some level. And now we're talking about like a few hours in prep time, a few hours in test time. That's like a Saturday that I'm going to lose. And then I still have to share my crappy results with the rest of the league. Like that just seems like an absolutely excruciating, horrible punishment.
I think that is pretty bad. I mean, I remember doing that in real time. Do you remember what you got on the ACT? Not the SAT, they changed the scoring.
Yeah, I think I got a 30 on the ACT. I was super hungover.
I hate you, Andy.
I remember a profound hangover.
You were 16 or 17, so
yeah.
That's right. Asterisk that. If we're reviewing math equations, the math on that doesn't add up wholly, but. Then again, it does. It also is so antithetical to everything about Andy Behrens. Like, you know, Andy's going to review. You know, he's like cramming that. He went to Crown Books and got the Kaplan study guide. Crown Books, how's that for a Midwestern old school rep? he got the Kaplan study guide. But also, that's grown up Andy. I love teenage Andy who went over hungover and still managed a 30. This is so, Andy, you're so damn smart and put together, even when you're not.
My daughter beat that. My daughter beat that. Pretty handily, I think.
Well, let me tell
you. She was not hungover, though.
She what?
She was not hungover, though.
No, not that you're aware of. I definitely
well, I dropped
was
her
not
off.
Hungover.
She did not appear hungover.
I was, if anything, I was hungover on anxiety, which is probably also not shocking to anybody, on anxiety and neuroses, and barely pulled a 27. But you know what? It worked out okay. It was fine.
Yeah.
The fantasy punishment, that would be so horrible. I'm just sitting there. The fantasy punishment that I saw that I think was the worst, and it is related to a tattoo. Maybe it's because I don't have tattoos. I understand what you're saying about the time killer, but it wasn't just the fact that this person had to receive a tattoo, but it was the specificity of that tattoo. It was a Tim Tebow tattoo, and it was a centaur, which... It's different than a minotaur. A minotaur is the half bull, bull head human body. A centaur is the torso and face of a man, in this case, the likeness of Tim Tebow, and then the body and back end of a horse. I also am fascinated. I feel like whoever figured this out really spent extra time on it, because if you know anything about Greek mythology, the centaurs are usually accompanied by Dionysus, who is, you know, like the Greek god of wine and revelry, which does not seem to present a Tebow-esque vibe to it.
No, so like, not at all.
It's a very layered insult on, and then to have like a Tim Tebow senator, and I think he also was wearing a Broncos helmet in the...
And is it a tattoo that is visible, like you go to the beach?
Bicep.
People are definitely seeing
bicep,
your... Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's brutal. Just waking up every day to Tim Tebow on your arm seems unusual and cruel. Like that, I will grant you a punishment that lasts for the rest of your life is particularly harsh.
Rough.
That's a rough one.
But you seem to like the pain because you have invented a whole new strategy when drafting quarterbacks. Forget zero RB and zero wide receiver. Our own Andy Behrens is a true disruptor in Shark Tank style, creating the zero QB strategy particularly suited for Superflex. I will now give you the floor so that you can give me your elevator pitch on why it works.
Yeah, no, it was, I should bring up the roster. It was just, obviously, it's a terrible idea, right? Zero QB and Superflex is perhaps not the way to go, but I will tell you why I fell into it. I think there is actually a pretty valid reason why I fell into it. So this was a draft that was set up by our friends at Razzball, and they put together a really nice league. And the idea is that it's going to be a startup dynasty Superflex league. So I don't have to nail everything in year one. Right. I don't have to knock everything out of the park. I just got to be kind of serviceable everywhere. And like in any sort of super flex draft, you're going to anticipate, obviously, that quarterbacks fly off the board early. I did not anticipate the rate at which they would fly off the board. Like, you know, I'm picking 10th, and I want to say that the quarterbacks were already gone all the way down through Joe Burrow by the time I had a chance to pick any player. So, like, that's tough. Wow. So you have to make a choice immediately. And this is, I guess, the one little thing that people can carry into their own drafts is that you can't, if you're picking near a turn like that, you can't just chase positions all draft, right? Like, you can't just be taking, okay, I'm behind on the position run here, so I got to take the 8th or 9th best guy. And now I'm behind at wide receiver, so I got to take the wide receiver 12 as my number one. And now I'm behind. Now I've skipped tight end entirely, so now I have to take the 6th best tight end in round 4 or something like that. Like, you don't want to be constantly chasing. You have to, in any draft, you have to give yourself a strength somewhere. And so I have the literal worst quarterbacks in this thing. I was lucky to get him too. I was eyeing Daniel Jones, didn't get him. Got stuck with one or both of them could have decent years, but I ended up with Sam Darnold and Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is clearly not ideal in any sort of super flex, right? But the one thing I did give myself is a huge advantage at running back and at receiver. So I have some actual team strengths, right? My running backs are really good. Off the top of my head, I want to say that it was Cam Akers and Najee Harris and a third who's not coming to me that was maybe Antonio Gibson, like some combination that was really, really good within the context of this league. And my receivers are like CeeDee Lamb and Allen Robinson and Devontae Smith. And it's like a great group. So I can look at my running backs and receivers and say, okay, well, I got those things right. I have an actual, relative to the rest of this league, I have two clear strengths. And that might not be enough in a super flex league where my quarterbacks are probably terrible. But again, you can't, you know, just because you're picking 10th, 11th, 12th, you can't give yourself, you know, the 10th best set of running backs and the 10th best set of wide receivers and the 10th best. Because, like, even if I had chased quarterbacks early, you know, now I'm talking about, like, I don't know, what would I have ended up with? Trevor Lawrence and Kirk Cousins, right? So I've spent my first two picks at the quarterback position, or two of my first three picks at the quarterback position. I still have nearly the worst quarterbacks in the league, right? Because I had no shot at Mahomes. I had no shot at any of the top 5 or 6 guys that we all expect to contend for, like, actual MVP honors or anything like that. Like, I was out on them. So are you going to, you know, am I going to be the guy who takes Tua in the 3rd round? Because that's where he went. Like, he went in the 3rd round, you know, like Kirk Cousins and Tua, those guys are gone by the 3rd or 4th round. So it wasn't a situation where I could just, you know, where I could just fall into a pretty good quarterback situation late. Yeah. So I just went all in. Like, I could see where the thing was headed pretty early. And I was messaging Dalton throughout the draft, actually, like, and making him, you know, he was kind of egging me on to go deeper and deeper and later a quarterback. And eventually I did. And that's how you fall into Sam Darnold and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And at least I don't hate Fitzpatrick this season. I'm not sure I can fully talk myself into Sam Darnold, but I certainly don't hate Fitzpatrick.
Okay. So first of all, I don't feel like it's that bad. If Fitzpatrick were your QB2, you'd be pretty happy with that, right? He's a top 20. We all have him.
Yeah.
Yahoo consensus ranked inside the top 20. The worry is that he's not going to stay on the field the whole time, right? And you're going to see some Heinicke in there. Like, that's the fear. But over the last 4 seasons, at least, I think Fitzpatrick has done a good job of bucking the narrative that he's horrible. The highs are obviously very high and the lows are very low, but he's been a top 10 fantasy producer in over 50% of his last 30 starts, which have occurred over the last 4 years with a minimum of 25 attempts. So I'm a little bullish on Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think he's my QB 17, you know, and if we're talking about the top 12 guys as being kind of automatic, like, that glut of in between, there's a lot of variance that could happen. They're sort of all possible high-end QB2s. In that mid space,
you can't argue with his receiving core either, right? Like, the downside to Fitzpatrick in this league is that it's dynasty, and like, am I going to have Ryan Fitzpatrick in 3 years? No, of course I won't. But for the current season, can I imagine him finishing? You know, a couple of injuries happen, and he has a couple big games, and pretty soon he's a top 12 fantasy quarterback. Like, that's really easy to imagine.
Yeah, that's a possibility. And Darnold, let's talk. You know, I have like. It's difficult for me because I do have a particular fondness for Sam. That's what I call him. And I know that ripping off 29 interceptable passes in 12 games is not a recipe for success. But as a Bears fan, I also believe that the stink of Adam Gase is very real. And if I look at what Teddy Bridgewater, who went into last year with the ultimate game manager moniker attached to him, right? Like, that's the reputation. In Joe Brady's system, he still put up QB19 numbers. Again, that's not fantastic, but if Sam Darnold is your QB2 and he finishes inside the top 20, and we know he has rapport with Robbie Anderson, and he gets a fresh start, and he too, if the argument for Fitz is that he has weapons, has this athletic marvel and more, and Christian McCaffrey there as well, and a defense that's not particularly good, that's still pretty green, even though it found a rhythm about the midpoint of last season. Like, I think that Sam Darnold could flirt with 4,000 passing yards. I think he could flirt with 30 touchdowns. I don't think that he is, I don't think he is washed, and I don't think that it is over for him. In fact, I might prefer to have Sam Darnold, I'm talking myself into this, which is why I'm pausing. I might prefer to have Sam Darnold in Joe Brady's system than Daniel Jones, even with his weapons attached to Jason Garrett.
Yeah, I think the only thing that differentiated those two is I talked myself into Jones on the basis of there being a little bit of rushing upside there. I like the weapons that he's got and all that. But I'm mostly with you on Darnold. It is, I'd be shocked if he gets to 30 touchdown passes even in a 17 game season, but 4,000 yards and like 24, 25, I think that's very doable. The receiving core is good. Anderson is good. Moore is good. We like Marshall. Christian McCaffrey stays healthy for a full season. That's like 80 to 100 catches in their cheap and easy yards for Sam Darnold, right? So I think 4,000 yards is definitely in play. 30 touchdowns is a big number for someone who's never approached it. That's probably the outer limit. But can he go 25 and 4,000? I think that's definitely in the cards, as long as he stays healthy.
I said flirt with 30 because my projection is 28, but that's still more than 25.
Yeah, 28 is definitely flirting with 30. That's fair.
So anyway, I don't think you did nearly as bad, and I am fascinated by this approach. I wish I had coined it because I've accidentally done it in every single Wavos draft we've ever been a part of.
The other thing I did there is I took a flyer. It's pretty late and it's probably not going to pay off for a couple of years, but I was conscious of getting like some rookie quarterbacks and young quarterbacks who might still do something. And I ended up with Kellen Mond there, which I tried to get Scott Fish to talk me into Kellen Mond, and he wasn't biting at all because obviously Kirk Cousins is still there through next season. But if it's we're playing this thing out as a true dynasty and I can sit on him for a couple of years, he's got a little bit of rushing upside. And we don't know who's going to be throwing to Justin Jefferson in 3 years. So if he's that guy, then he's pretty interesting too. So I did take a handful of small flyers on those guys.
What about Davis Mills? Did he end up being drafted?
I did. I believe that's another thing I ended up with. Did I get Tyrod? I might have done the terrible Texans double dip in that league too, and given. A bunch of best ball leagues are blending together right now, so I'm not sure I did it there, but I've definitely somewhere I've done Mills and Tyrod, which seems like hell, right? And probably isn't going to pay off. But Mills is such an unknown to me because, like, I saw enough late night Stanford games that I know he can be brilliant and horrible in the same game, sometimes within the same like 20 or 30 minute stretch. Like, he's pretty wild. It's pretty fun. And it might go well by the end of the season. He's got some receivers too.
I'm interested to see what happens in Houston with that. In fact, earlier today I was tweaking my quarterback rankings and deciding where to place Mills and Tyrod in relation also to Jimmy G and Trey Lance and Fields and Dalton. I think a curious, particularly for this time of year, exercise for anybody who is like really wanting fantasy to come back and is missing it, to go and look at all of the expert quarterback rankings. Cause when you get from like 27 to 37, cause there are, you can rank 37 quarterbacks, like you can start to do that. You know, it gets pretty, I might even have 40 quarterbacks ranked because there are question marks, and not every team obviously is holding on-field OTAs, which kind of further complicates some of these quarterback competitions.
Yeah, for sure. There's plenty of teams where you got to rank two guys, right? There's plenty of teams where it's completely conceivable that we're going to get, you know, 6 to 8 games out of Cam Newton, and then Mac Jones finishes the season. You probably have to have all these presumptive week one starters in your ranks, guys like Andy Dalton, who are almost certainly not going to finish the season for their teams, but they're going to put up enough points to maybe crack the top 35.
He's going to be on the field for the first 2 games. That's happening. Unless Aaron Donald completely trucks him in the opener, he's going to be on the field because the second week is versus Cincinnati. So I think he's got 2 in him for sure. We also talked about the premiere of my Rest versus Rust series for this year. And I kicked it off with, speaking of quarterbacks, Dak Prescott. How are you feeling about Prescott coming off of the catastrophic, pretty gruesome ankle injury?
Yeah, I feel great about him. And I'm not having read your piece. I'm not like that didn't dissuade me from drafting him one bit. Like I'm into him. I see no reason why he can't. I mean, no quarterback is going to maintain the sort of pace that he was on last season, right? Like he was on pace, not just to get 5,000 passing yards and not just to break the single season yardage record, but he was on pace to crush it. He didn't even, he only needed barely over 300 yards per game from that point through the rest of the season to hit it, right? Like he was just on an absolutely insane pace. It was 400 yards every game. And I don't know, he's not going to do that over the course of a full season, but he's 1 through 3. He probably has the best receiving core in the league. He's got a back who, you know, if Zeke Elliott can give us 1 or 2 more seasons at something close to peak Zeke levels, right? And there's a lot of hype around him right now. That's a guy who's going to catch 70 passes and do a lot with it. And those are the same sort of cheap and easy yards we were talking about with McCaffrey. So it's just a great situation for Dak. He was on fire last year. He's also like, there's a rushing element to his game, but it's not like, it's not like he, like it's almost for a quarterback. It's almost for fantasy purposes. It's like the best kind of rushing element because he's not going to run the ball 100 times a year. He's not going to put himself at undue risk as a rusher. He'll run the ball like 50 to 60 times and he's going to run it when they get inside the 5. Like he's, you know, so he's going to finish the season with like 5 to 7 rushing touchdowns, which is a huge help in terms of fantasy. But he's also not exposing himself to the level of risk that we might see from Lamar Jackson, that we might see from Kyler Murray, players like that, who are going to run the ball better, but much more frequently.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I also just want to reiterate that Dak is not, you know, right now I feel like there's a lot of debate about whether or not injury prone is a myth or real. Regardless, Dak has been a durable player for the bulk of his career. I mean, I think he only missed 2 games in college. He never missed a start as a pro. There was one game, I believe, against the Rams, if we're talking about Aaron Donald, where he went out with a shoulder sprain, and he didn't finish the game, but he came back the next week, and that was it. So I'm not worried about him at all. There are some question marks along the offensive line. He obviously opens the season under very bright lights against the Super Bowl defending champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have arguably one of the top 3 defenses in the league. We saw what they did to Patrick Mahomes. So I think there's going to be some rust to shake off, maybe week 1 and week 2. But everybody is also starting from an interesting place post-COVID plateau, of course, as well.
If there's one thing that I can add, it's forgive me, I'm blanking on the name of the doctor that you speak to in the series.
Dr. Weber.
Who just made the critical point that, I mean, makes a lot of sense. We all know this, but it's a broken bone. And there's a level of certainty with fractures that doesn't necessarily exist with the type of injury for the next player that we're going to talk about, right? Like, this isn't like connective tissue or anything like that. Like, once a bone heals, it's healed.
Yeah, he did make that point. Thank you for bringing that up. That he said that fractures are better predictors for return to sport than ligament tears. And Saquon Barkley is the next player up in the series. I've written 3/4 of the article already. It'll post on Thursday, which is probably when you're listening to this. We're recording on Wednesday. Saquon is tough. You know, I was looking at a couple of polls on Twitter, and the debate seems to be, would you rather draft Saquon Barkley or Zeke Elliott? And of course, on the heels of Saquon releasing this ultimate hype video where he's cutting in the sand, everybody's hot for Saquads, and it's happening. I have to admit, I'm a little bit cautious still, without giving away everything in the article. I think part of the reason Saquon did so much damage was obviously his work in the receiving game. And we've seen the number of pass catchers added to the offense. So his target share is going to go down a little bit. But I also don't think, and this is the big one, you're going to have to read the quote from the doctor. It would not behoove a team that drafted a player second overall. First time, by the way, last time that happened was Reggie Bush. So it's been a minute. To give him the sort of workload that they were giving him and risk a setback. Because something that the doctor revealed to me was that when you are coming back from a soft tissue or ligament issue, an early setback is not a small thing to overcome. And that could drastically change the long-term health of his career and knee.
Yeah, it's a, you know, sometimes I feel like I see, and listen, nobody in the fantasy industry, with few exceptions, is like an actual medical expert. I feel like I've seen a number of people talk about ACL injuries as if it's like some sort of cosmetic procedure or something, right? And like everybody just comes back fine. I don't think that's where we are. Your doctor may have had a different opinion about that, but it still seems to me that there's a range of outcomes here. There is an elevated risk of re-injury that doesn't seem to exist with fractures, with the type of injury that Dak is coming back from. Like, I still, you know, and hey, like Tommy John surgery has become, you know, no big deal in Major League Baseball. And that is certainly encouraging, but I don't know that we're there with ACL recoveries yet. And maybe that's my own experience with Derrick Rose. Maybe that's, you know, just a couple of decades of covering the NFL, right? And not everybody comes back to what they were. Jamal Charles certainly didn't come back to what he was. Again, that was like 5 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. But it's not like everybody just comes back from an ACL injury and they are exactly what they were. Plus, this seems like a pretty tight timeline to do it. But again, like, but this is also one of those situations where the Adrian Peterson recovery just changed everybody's perspective, and that set the new standard that everybody holds seemingly every NFL player to now, and it's just utterly unrealistic. We've never seen that before, and we haven't really seen it since in terms of ACL recovery.
Don't know what his rehab. We don't know what Adrian Peterson's rehab process included or did not include.
Yeah.
And there are different protocols in place now, shall we say.
Yes, exactly. So I don't know what this is going to look like. It was the videos that he released this week on Tuesday were hilarious in a sense, right? Like the cutting in the sand and all that. Like, I mean, it's good to see, right? It's good to see him doing anything. Yeah. It's good to see him doing anything football related. He looked explosive. He wasn't doing anything really in relation to other human beings. So like who knows? They weren't, you know, it wasn't in-game stuff, but it was super encouraging.
It was encouraging. I like that you mentioned when they came back to what they were, because I touch on this in the article, there are sets of studies that have percentages for return to sport, but there's a separate set of data for return to previous level of participation. And those are two different things. Is some guy going to make the roster and play? Yeah, 100%. Is he going to be the 2020 touchdown prospect that, you know, some people are forecasting? That's sure, that's hyperbolic and lofty, but like, that's another, like, can you return to being elite? Can you return to being somebody who was worthy of a second overall draft pick? That's another question. And that's the expectation that we have. And also, over the first 4 weeks of the season, here's the schedule: Denver Broncos, Washington football team, Atlanta Falcons. Okay, fine. New Orleans Saints. I just do not believe, I'll say it right now, I do not believe that Saquon is going to be fed the ball and given the volume for someone who is being drafted at the place that he is being drafted, at least initially. And we all know that, like, in season long redraft, what happens over the first month of the season is almost as important, more important, because it's what gets you to the back half of the season.
Right, right. So you've got to keep it in. I mean, you're really drafting him for the possibility of Saquon returning to that, like, you know, 90 catch, 2,000 scrimmage yard level and being that sort of player by perhaps the back half of the season. But you're totally right. You shouldn't necessarily expect that in September, and they would probably be unwise to give him more than, I don't know what they'll do. Maybe they'll blow this out of the water, but they would probably be unwise to give him more than, say, 15 touches a game in September and just let him ramp up to something close to 80-90% of the snaps, but not give that to him right away. It's so different position by position in football too, because like I feel like when you cover the NBA, it's like one ACL recovery looks a lot like the other because the positions aren't so radically different. But like we see quarterbacks and linemen come back on like six month timelines from ACL injuries. Like Philip Rivers can tear his ACL and finish a game, but that's just not realistic for other players that rely on extreme explosive athleticism, like running back and receiver. Like it's just a much more complicated situation.
So I'm going to ask you the question before we move on. Who would you rather draft, Zeke or Saquon?
Yeah, that's really tough. And I think they belong to the same tier. I hope the right answer is Saquon. My ranks currently say Saquon, so I'll stick with that. I'm coming back around on like, man, the offseason fluff pieces on Zeke have been pretty powerful, right? Like everybody likes him. He seems to be taking things seriously if reporting can be believed. So I may yet change my mind during camp, but right now I've still got Saquon, and some of that is just based on, I know I sound pessimistic on Saquon earlier, but he's also one of the best college runners I've ever seen. And his rookie season was absolutely mind blowing. Like he's great. When we get peak Saquon, it's about as good as anybody in the league. It might be better than anybody in the league at his position. So I'm holding on to that hope that we see that guy by October or November.
For what it's worth, even though I sounded pessimistic, I will say I compared him to Zeke because I have those two running backs back to back in my rankings. I do have Zeke though at 6 and Saquon at 7. So very close, just behind Saquon. And you know what? It's June. It can all change. But in doing this article, I did move Saquon outside of my top 5. Let's close the show with a little believe or make believe, okay? And let's kick it off with everybody. I mean, if Jameis Winston isn't one of the most memeable characters in the NFL, is he playing when he does this stuff? I mean, we just talked about Saquon's video, which was like this hype piece. It was like a 1990s music video production. It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And then you got Jameis Winston blinking and dodging like there's a fly up in his face, but he got the LASIK, so I don't know what that's about. I mean, are you there? You guys just got to go watch it. It's incredible. But are you believing or make believing on him as the Saints QB1?
Yeah, it's just a great video. And I don't know why Jameis continues to put himself in these sort of situations and to do it on tape. It's like 6 or 8 seconds of a coach swatting at Jameis at the football. Jameis not fumbling to his credit, but also not really looking downfield in any meaningful way. And
you're not looking anywhere.
Like it's just hilarious. It's just a really, really nice, I don't know, 6 to 10 seconds. It was fun. I'm not particularly bullish on him but this is such a complicated fantasy equation, because if Jameis is the starting quarterback for the Saints, and I just did a podcast the other day with Marcus Grant, and we were talking about the same situation. If the Saints took Drew Brees, one of the most accurate and prolific quarterbacks in history, if they took him off the field when they would get inside the 20-yard line, in favor of Taysom Hill, they are sure as hell going to do that with Jameis Winston, right? Like Jameis as the starter is not going to be the full-time quarterback. I feel pretty confident in saying that. And there are going to be plenty of times when Taysom Hill has the ball in his hands when they get inside the 10. If Taysom Hill wins that job, it's just flat out his job. You're not running Jameis Winston onto the field to spell Taysom Hill occasionally if Taysom Hill is the starter. So like, for fantasy purposes, like the guy that I've been taking flyers with late in drafts is definitely Taysom, because man, if he wins that job, now we're talking about somebody who can easily finish in any given week, even when he's not good, even when he doesn't pass well, he can finish as a top 10 quarterback. And I just don't think that outcome is there for Jameis, because he's going to come off the field too often.
But what does that do? I'm thinking you mentioned accurately that this was a complicated fantasy equation. What does that then do for where you rank Alvin Kamara?
I don't know if I'm probably low on Kamara relative to the rest of the industry. I think I've got him like 10 overall right now. I wouldn't draft him inside the top 6, top 8, anything like that. I'm pretty terrified about what we saw. And again, this job may be Winston's predominantly, and if it is, Mm-hmm. Great. That's probably good for Alvin. That probably means that he gets another season of 80 catches, 70 plus catches, something like that. But man, if this goes to Taysom Hill, if we see a lot of Taysom Hill this year, I mean, those first three games last year with Taysom at quarterback, Kamara was targeted 6 times. Like he was perfectly on pace to set the single season reception record for a running back. And then Hill happened and then he had no shot. And that's a huge worry because we know they're not going to give him the ball as a rusher 200 times. They've never done it. Like he's going to end up with about 175 carries. And if I don't see a path to him catching 70 balls, like that's going to be really, he's a great, great player, but that's just not enough workload.
No, I think that's why this question is particularly, as you said, complicated. And by the way, the beat reporting is not helping provide any clarity. You know, on June 2nd, you've got Nick Underhall of NewOrleans.com saying that Winston is not the Saints, quote, solidified starter. And then 2 days later, The Athletic's Larry Holder says that Winston is the, quote, odds-on favorite to win the starting job. And I mentioned some teams aren't holding on-field OTAs. Well, the Saints are one of them. So, you know, we don't have any extra intel there. I think you make a very good point about James. I think Jameis is going to win the job. I think that Sean Payton just loves a damn project is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And I think he understands Taysom Hill's limitations more. Perhaps Winston's on what? A 1 year prove it, right? So this is, I don't think he would have necessarily signed that deal if he didn't think that he was going to see the field in a starting capacity. But you make a good point about, is he going to get pulled off the field or does Peyton think that, you know, he is fixable and he wants a reclamation project?
Yeah, when we do have clarity on this situation, like if we find out that Taysom Hill is the starting quarterback week one, I'm probably going to have Taysom, if not in my overall top 12 QBs, he's going to be real close. And if we find out the same about Jameis, I'm still going to have him behind like Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm going to have him behind, you know, I'll probably only have him
Sam
like
Darnold.
He's going to be in that range. And that seems crazy to say because he's throwing a Michael Thomas and he's throwing a Kamara and he's like, it's a ripe situation and it's Sean Payton and all that. But I'm probably going to have him in that range. He's going to be right around QB 20 for me. I'm not going to be as enthusiastic as I will be if it's Hill.
All right. Well, how about David Montgomery? Are we believing or make believing on David Montgomery beating his 2020 numbers of 247 carries and just over 1,000 yards?
I totally believe that he can beat the rushing numbers. Like if we're only talking about his rushing stats, yes, I think he can do that. It's the buzz around him and some of the stories around him are really encouraging. I as a Bears fan, I love to see it. And we're not talking about dazzling rushing numbers either. Like obviously people remember he took advantage of an incredible layup line of a schedule in the back half of last season. And he crushed it. Like he did exactly what you'd want a player to do against a series of friendly matchups. He was great. Like overall for his NFL career, he's been okay. Like his greatest skill I would say is that he's been available. He's played through some injuries, doesn't miss a lot of time. That's all really good. But I mean, the numbers that you just gave, that's just kind of what we expect from a replacement level running back. So if he has improved, if he's improved his speed, explosiveness and all that, it's awesome. I don't think that last year's receiving workload can possibly be there because we get Tariq Cohen back. We know that Matt Nagy just absolutely loves to, you know, he's got his own little set of plays for Tariq Cohen that is not going to go away. Tariq Cohen's going to get 90, 100 targets this year. That was just a lot of workload that went to Montgomery that there's no way it's going to be repeated. As long as Cohen stays on the field for 14, 15 games, he's just going to see a ton of passing work. And if Montgomery was getting 6 targets per game last year, it's going to go right back to 3.
I think it's an interesting conundrum because we know that David Montgomery, you nailed it, has been mostly available, right? The windfall of production has come from volume, not because he has ever been efficient, right? In fact, in 2020, he had a true yards per carry average of 4.0, which was RB47 for that category. So we know that he's not a particularly efficient runner, but we know that he's a capable runner. And we're adding Damien Williams. You mentioned we get Tariq Cohen back. In 2019, forget the 2020 numbers, but in 2019, Montgomery averaged 15 carries a game and he caught about 1.5 balls a game. And he ended up being the RB25 overall. That was 2019. Right now, he's being drafted as the RB21 overall. This was the same argument I had in favor of Montgomery last year. Like, do we think he can replicate his 2019 numbers? Yeah, I think he can absolutely do that again. So in relation to ADP, I'll take him where he's going. That's a fine replacement value. And by chance, if he becomes more efficient, if he does happen to increase his speed by 1.5 miles per hour, as this special trainer has like helped him achieve, according to reports, then like, great, he's more efficient. He'll be able to make up for the loss in potential touches.
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest that there's no profit available on Montgomery, like for fantasy purposes, because one thing I was afraid of by the end of last season is that people were going to assume that what David Montgomery had just did and what they had just seen from him in November and December was totally projectable into 2021. And oh man, we're gonna be drafting this guy in the second round. We're gonna be drafting this guy early in the third round. And that simply hasn't happened. Like the fantasy market has been smarter than that. At least the people who are doing early drafts and best ball drafts and whatnot, we've been smarter than that. Nobody's paying for what he was in November and December, and that is prudent, and nobody should, right? Like it was not, right. It was just never going to happen with a healthy Cohen. So I think you're right. If you can get him at something close to ADP, if you can get him as RB 21, 22, something like that, there's definitely room for him to be an absolute hit on that price.
You're definitely not getting Darren Waller that late at all. In fact, he is being drafted the 25th overall player, according to ADP. So forget the position. He's tight end 3, according to ADP. So that makes him what, like a late second, early third round pick. Are you believing or make believing that Darren Waller can eclipse his almost 1,200 yards from 2020?
Yeah, listen, I think he should clearly be a top 3 fantasy tight end. No, I wouldn't bet on him eclipsing what he did last season, because it's just a huge total for a tight end. We know he's in a great situation. He's clearly the number one receiver there. There's no way that he's not going to lead that team in targets if he stays healthy, because there's nobody else that you're really eager to see with the ball in their hands. Maybe, you know, Henry Ruggs is like a lid lifter sort of player, and they just don't have anybody who is going to command the kind of target share that Waller does. Waller's going to be great. He's coming off a year that was absolutely spectacular, and we shouldn't set that as the baseline expectation for any player. So if he falls just short of what he did last year, he's still probably the tight end 2 or the tight end 3, depending on how healthy Kittle remains, right? Like he's still great. So I don't think he's going to beat what he did last year, and I'm not super enthusiastic about the Raiders, but he's going to be great.
I agree 100% with you. Like in all of the volume-based metrics that matter, he was tight end 1. But more importantly, he was top 3 in all of the efficiency stats. So completed air yards, yards per route run, yards after catch. Like even if I don't think that his volume or his target share is going to dwindle, but even if it does, we know that he has the skill to make up for any potential lack or to just leave it steady. And when you're looking at a position like tight end that is so gross and so volatile, like the tight end 6 is like, oh my gosh, 4 catches and 50 yards. Hooray. You know, like you are drafting for the ceiling here. And he's going to, I think, unless he gets hurt, knock on wood, going to deliver on that ceiling. So the yardage total, I'm with you. Like, I don't know if he's going to clear 1,200 yards, but another 100 catches? Yeah, I definitely think so.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, I don't have a bad thing to say about him. And I actually think, like, you want to take Darren Waller in round 2? I get it. I'll fully sign off.
There was also a report that Sammy Watkins was the best receiver at Ravens minicamp. You believe in or make believe in on that?
I love that you didn't even want to touch this story. I just thought it was kind of fun. I think it's a fun collection of receivers that Baltimore has given Lamar Jackson, right? Guys that are just great downfield threats. And listen, we might get 8 games, we might get 10 games, 12 games from Sammy Watkins. Health is definitely a concern here. Sammy Watkins is actually not an old player yet. Like that's crazy, but true. He's like 28 years old or something like that. Like he's not even necessarily on the downslope of his career. He's been a 1,000-yard receiver. I don't think he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver again. I don't think by the end of the season, we're probably going to look at this receiving core and it's going to be like three or four guys with super similar numbers in terms of catches and yards. Like, I don't think there's a 1,000-yard receiver here. I think Bateman and perhaps Watkins and certainly Brown can all finish with like 750 to 850 and right around 60, maybe not 60 catches, 50 plus catches, because there's just not going to be a lot of pass volume there. And they're going to be separated by touchdowns. And that's what it's going to come down to. I don't think there's a ton of separation between these guys right now. I think Bateman is somebody that we're going to be really into long term. But I don't think it's crazy to think that Sammy Watkins can challenge for like the yardage lead on this team.
Andy, first of all, he just turned 28 on June 14th, which makes super sense because he's such a Gemini. He hasn't played a full 16-game season since his rookie year in 2014. That was before I even worked at Yahoo. Like, that was a minute and some change ago. The last time he went over I agree with you about almost everything, but like, you think he could be the yardage leader when the last time he had a 100-yard game was week one of 2019 on the Chiefs and versus the Jaguars? Like, he couldn't even do that on one of the most prolific offenses in the league. He's going to do that on the Ravens?
Well, to be fair, I don't know that anybody on this team gets 900 yards. Like, I don't think we're going to have a huge yardage total on this team. I think we're going to have three guys who finish with really similar yardage totals, all of them kind of in the wide receiver three range. And, you know, that for fantasy purposes, they're going to be separated by touchdowns. And we're not going to know which one is the Ravens receiver to play in any given week. They're going to be really frustrating to rank too.
Yeah, I'm going to say you're right there, but it's not going to be Sammy Watkins. Like, you can remove him from the equation. I mean, I was with him on some of the alien stuff, too. Like, I did a deep dive. I understood. He was on the Rams for a minute. And then when he moved to the Chiefs, I was like, okay. But if you can't produce with Patrick Mahomes throwing you the ball, then you definitely can't produce with Lamar Jackson not throwing the ball. I hear the point that you are making. You're not even trying to make. I hear the point that you are making. And the frustrating thing about this offense is the lack of volume and the lack of opportunities given to the pass catchers. But I just can't imagine a world in which Sammy Watkins is the one that, I don't know, spreads, like, that all of a sudden the C parts and Sammy Watkins becomes an answer to any question.
It's fair. I know he hasn't done anything in recent history to make you feel that he could be any kind of fantasy factor this year. He's like a last round best ball guy for me. You know that there's going to be a couple of weeks in which he finishes as like a wide receiver too, right? That's just flat out going to happen. I mean, hell, it was happening in Kansas City. He might get at least as many opportunities with Baltimore as he did with Kansas City. It's not necessarily the same quality offense, but it is a team that might reasonably average, you know, 30 points per game this year. So I'm not totally writing him off. That's basically all I'm saying. I don't think there's a receiver on this team that is worth actually actively targeting. I don't think they're going to be separated by a ton in the year end stats.
You know, it's June, by the way, when you're on a podcast and each of the hosts is proselytizing Sam Darnold and or Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, how about it?
Seriously. Right? Like, we're like, no,
we're just getting these
guys
out of the way so we don't have to talk about them in July and August when drafts are actually happening.
Okay, last one. Actually, second to last one. Trey Lance, according to NBC Sports, Matt McDaniel, who's the team's offensive coordinator, says the team is giving him every chance to rise up the depth chart this summer. So he's the anti-Justin Fields, the anti-Matt Nagy situation. I'm believing on this. I feel like, why not? Oh. Especially after we talked about Jimmy G at the top of the show and, you know, how salty Kyle might be.
Yeah, I fully buy this. And I think, like, the one problematic thing for Trey Lance is that when he is the quarterback, and it's definitely going to happen, like, if it doesn't happen in week one, it's going to happen probably in September, I would imagine, unless Jimmy G is just absolutely on fire to open the year. But I mean, guys who are drafted this early play. Quarterbacks who were drafted this early end up playing. They don't get stashed. They're obviously enthusiastic about him. My one concern is that it might look like his college offense, where he's throwing, like, you know, 20 times, 25 times a game. That could be real. the Niners could just decide we want to run it down your throat and we're barely going to put the ball in the air. And that's going to be a problem for the other elements of this passing offense. But Lance can still be great, right? Like, because he's going to be part of that running game, too. I think it's absolutely in play. I think it's probably the scenario that Niners fans are going to root for, I would assume. I know that in Chicago right now, like, it's, you know, but before Fields was even the pick, when the Bears made the trade and hadn't even picked Justin Fields yet, like, the city was unanimous in wanting to see Justin Fields start in week one. So I can only imagine what that's going to look like when he has a couple of good preseason games. But as you said earlier, I mean, Andy Dalton is going to be the quarterback in week one and probably in week two. And those are tough games. And there's a clear path to the Bears starting the season like 0-3 and we're 1-2. And there's just no way that Andy Dalton is going to survive that. So I think we see Fields certainly by October. But I think it's almost likely that we'll see Trey Lance in September.
I agree with you. Last one, Irv Smith and Tyler Conklin. We're ending with a little peach season. All right. Zimmer expects a bigger role for both of these. Now, just to refresh in case you checked out on some of the springtime activities over free agency, Kyle Rudolph is no longer on the squad. He's been added to the glut of options in New York. That frees up about 50 targets here. Kyle Rudolph averaged just over, I believe, 3 targets a game, but his total is a little bit, it doesn't convey the whole volume because he missed 4 games over the last end of the season. So 50 targets cleared up here. For what it's worth, in those 4 games where Kyle Rudolph was absent over the last 4 weeks of the season, both Conklin and Smith had 15 catches apiece, which is a little bit frustrating. I feel like they might just cancel each other out. But it was Smith who had 183 yards to Conklin's 168. He also had two more touchdowns than Conklin, and he ran more routes. So I would say he's certainly, you know, the option I would take ahead of Conklin, but this is going to be frustrating.
It is going to be frustrating. And this is one of those, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens like during the offseason and during OTAs that we shouldn't pay a whole lot of attention to. And I don't always put a lot of stock into, you know, even if it's informed speculation, when a beat reporter is sort of just speculating on who might start in week one and might not start in week one, like that's, I don't know, it's fine. It's notable, but it's not something that I'm going to take to like my ranks and adjust anything, right? I don't care that much about it. We can tune it out and you'll be just fine. But this was Zimmer himself talking about these players. So when a coach is, who's somebody in a decision-making position in terms of playing time, it starts to talk about it, we really do need to listen, and we really do need to, like, I've lowered Irv Smith in the ranks. I had some Irv Smith fantasies where he was a top 8 tight end this year. I think he's really gifted. He was number 2 last year at the position, just behind Tonyan in terms of fantasy points per target. Like, I think he's good, and I think he probably still retains this, you know, when they get inside the 10-yard line role. I think Cousins is going to look to him a fair amount. And there's certainly a path here for him to finish with 6 to 8 touchdowns. But he's clear, like, Conklin is clearly a factor. He's going to be much more of a factor in terms of playing time than I wanted him to be. And so that has kind of forced Irv Smith into like that, you know, Troutman, Cole Kmet range of tight ends that, you know, I just have to keep him outside of the top 10. And yeah. I hate it because I think Irv Smith is really talented.
It feels like Conklin is just going to eat up the upside that Smith appeared to have. Smith does have the NFL bloodlines for what it's worth, and obviously the higher draft pedigree. I believe he was a 2nd-round pick and Conklin was a 5th-round pick. But you're right. Also, I'm just remember like in August of last year when BC Johnson was the team's wide receiver 2 ahead of Justin Jefferson?
Yeah.
So if we are talking grain of salt, but I do think the fact that Zimmer himself is saying it's not that Smith isn't going to have opportunities, it's that he's not going to have as many because Conklin now will become a thorn in the side of right. of fantasy managers every week as you're like hoping for, like, maybe he steals a touchdown or two, or maybe he, you know, gets lucky. I think you're right, though, that Smith will probably be the option closer to the end zone, and last year's stats would bear that out. But it's just another little annoyance from one Zimmer. Thank you very much.
Yep. Nope. Fully agree. I had imagined a path for Irv Smith to to see, I don't know, 80, 90 targets this year. And I just don't think it's there. I just don't think it's happening. If he's going to have a lot of fantasy value, it's going to have to be one of those like Eric Ebron type, you know, ratios of touchdowns to targets. And that's never likely.
No, you don't want to chase those either. But what you might want to chase, if you're into college talk, is the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Dan Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and our friend Pat Forty from SI. And you should absolutely, especially this time of the year, be listening to Post It Up with Chris Haynes for more in-depth conversation from the world of the NBA. I'm at @LizLoza_FF. That is at Andy Behrens. We will pod again next week. Check us out on Twitter @YahooFantasy. And we're out. That's something you can believe on.